every few weeks or so, we check in with the Indianapolis Star and our good friend, the beat writer for Indiana basketball and football, is Zach Osterman. Zach, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Great. Thanks for joining us this morning. We know that you're always busy, and we always think the off season is the off season, and there's not a whole lot going to be left to talk about or look at, but there really isn't an off season anymore either sport, is there?
No, not really.
You just need to find some time to grab a vacation every now and again before the grind of quote-unquote the season. But big news yesterday from Indiana basketball. We'll start there this morning as the ACC Big Ten Challenge opponents were announced in the conference. 15 ACC teams, 14 Big Ten teams. That means Pittsburgh is left out this year. But the Indiana Hoosiers, for the second year in a row, draw a marquee opponent. And for a second year in a row, they draw a marquee opponent at the Assembly Hall. I think a lot of people thought, well, we got Carolina last year. We got them at the Assembly Hall. So that means, A, we're going on the road. And, B, maybe with a new coach, maybe with these guys going pro, we don't get that stellar opponent. How did all this come about?
Well, that's a good question, especially the back-to-back home games. It's not usual, although Indiana did play back-to-back road games at one point about 6 or 7 years ago, I think. They played at Boston College and then at NC State. And it allowed them to sort of balance out the ACC Big Ten Challenge with the Kentucky series so that those two weren't both at home or both on the road in the same season. This, whether it was requested by Indiana or something unintended or whatever, will balance out with the Louisville series so that ACC Big Ten and Louisville aren't both at home or both on the road in the next 2 years. And then if you're Indiana scheduling beyond next season, whether it's Louisville or you're trying to get Kentucky back or Arizona or whatever, you at least kind of know where you are in the ACC Big Ten rotation. So as for the opponent, it surprised a lot of people, and I know there are a lot of folks, national folks, who said they sort of wish they could see Duke against somebody else, but it's a reminder that Indiana's a draw. There's no question there's going to be an intense level of interest in Indiana under Archie Miller this season, first-year head coach. You know, there's a feeling, not just locally, but there's certainly a feeling nationally that Archie Miller is going to do big things in Indiana. So anytime you put Indiana Duke on TV, regardless of where the two programs are, it's going to play. It's going to pull interest.
How much of an advantage is it for Archie Miller in his first season to get this game at home? He'll finally get to see he's heard the rumors of Assembly Hall. He's been on the other side in the building. But with nationally ranked Duke coming to town, that's a pretty cool way to open the curtain, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, at the same time, he'd probably tell you that, well, I don't think he would tell you this, but there might be a part of him that wishes that he'd get something, a draw that was just a little bit kinder. I mean, you're talking about maybe the ACC front runner next year. And Indiana's obviously a team that's going to have five seniors, but it's also a team that's got to replace three underclassmen. And is probably kind of in the early stages of a roster retooling. But I think Archie Miller, the other thing, I think it's fair to point out that he said kind of from the beginning, whether it's talking about scheduling or just talking about the mood of the program in general, is you've got to challenge yourself. You've got to challenge yourself wherever you can. And Duke at home, Duke anywhere, is going to be one of those challenges. This obviously isn't the game that he arranged specifically. These matchups are generally determined by TV. But for a coach who has not been at all shy since he was hired about talking about wanting Indiana to act like a big boy, to take on the big boys, all those different kinds of things under his tutelage, so to speak, this is a pretty big one.
It is a big one, and it's a no-lose situation, in my opinion, because anytime you play Duke, it doesn't hurt you if they happen to beat you, but if you beat them, good things can usually – that can signify good things, and it can help pad the numbers down the road. So it's Duke, Indiana, the Big Ten ACC Challenge, dates and times to be released later, but that was the big basketball news yesterday, and which brings me to the opposite end of the spectrum. The Gavitt games were released where the Big Ten is playing the Big East, and the opposite end of the draw spectrum would be Indiana taking on Seton Hall. Why are the Gavitt games a deal? Who was trying to pound square holes into round pegs there? Creighton 1 year on a rebuild, and Seton Hall this year. I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess it's for TV. We know that, but what's the big deal behind this?
Well, keep in mind the original sort of effort behind the Gavitt games, because these are always played very early in the season, is essentially to kind of have a showcase sort of series right at the beginning of the season. You know, because there's the SEC Big 12 Challenge, there's the ACC Big 10 Challenge, and all that stuff. But those typically happen from sort of late end of November, you know, onward in the schedule. The goal is to have a game right off the bat and then there's eight a year, so it doesn't involve every Big Ten team. I think Tom Crean said at one point last season that Indiana is
5 of 7.
5 of 7, yes. And so this will be two out of – it started – the year they played Creighton was the first year of the Gavitt game, so they've been in 2 of 3 so far now. You know, and I'm not trying to be flippant, but I think it does seem like they maybe want to create some non-traditional matchups. And yet at the same time, again, without trying to be flippant, I don't know how many great matchups you can create.
Well, that's the point. Other than
think about the ACC Big Ten Challenge. How many times have we seen Indiana play UNC or Michigan State play Duke? Because typically, in this particular case, those Indiana and Duke are two teams that would seem to have differing expectations ahead of next season. But in general, that's an event that is arranged around trying to match up teams with similar levels of expectation ahead of the coming year. I don't know if you can do that so easily, so readily with the Big East. You've obviously got Xavier. You've obviously got Villanova.
Butler.
My guess would be there's probably some hesitancy, and this is genuinely my speculation, just sort of consider it an informed guess. Some hesitancy to match up IU and Butler, because IU and Butler already played twice every 4 years in another event.
Absolutely. So that ruins one opponent, and when your league only has two or three top level opponents, you don't even get a chance at one of them.
Well, but I think if you're
the
Indiana,
ACC has Louisville, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Duke, Carolina. You can rattle off the teams. In the Big East, you can name both of them. And I just, make something for TV. If not, let Archie and Fred schedule a game that's a little bit better.
Well, I also would need a willing partner. I think the Big East was a willing partner. I think, you know, from the Big Ten's perspective, there has been for the last several years, I think we've talked about it before, a push to get out into East Coast markets more often. And look, if you're Indiana, I mean, no, IU Seton Hall in Newark is not going to get the blood up for fans the way that IU Duke in Bloomington will. But this is not a bad game for Archie Miller and company. I mean, Seton Hall's a team that's probably going to be lingering on the fringes. Maybe probably has legitimate NCAA tournament hopes next season, but not necessarily one of those that's going to be competing for, you know, a top two, top three seed. It's a nice early challenge. It's the kind of game that's going to keep your non-conference strength of schedule up without necessarily having to, you know, go play at Arizona or go play at UCLA or something really extreme like that.
See, Keith, that's why we have Zach on. He talks me off the ledge. I get all fired up, and he brings rational thought and good debate to all this. I just wish the Big East, again, the ACC makes complete sense. The Big East seems forced, but you're right. It forces you to get into that opponent. I just can't wait for the big IU-DePaul game to come up here in the next couple of years so we can all go to Joe's on Weed Street and have a great time and have fun. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He checks in from the Indianapolis Star. At Zach Osterman on Twitter, you can find him. And wrapping up, I know you've got a busy day in front of you as well. A very sad story yesterday. Indiana football, great, and I'm going to call him great because he was that in Indiana. James Hardy was found dead yesterday in a Fort Wayne river, I believe it was, aged only 31 years of age. Just a tragic story, Zach. We saw what a great athlete he was in his high school career. He played two sports in Indiana. He set more. I read the receiving records last half hour. There's about six of them for single season in career. Just a phenomenal football player that you had a chance of seeing play as well. But a story kind of tinged with tragedy. It wasn't fun to hear about yesterday.
No, and I think it kind of came as a surprise to a lot of people. I know, obviously, Hardy had at least one or two sort of incidents after college. He had the incident in Los Angeles. But in general, I don't think anybody, you know, I've talked to some former coaches, some former teammates, and it caught a lot of people by surprise. And, you know, you talk to folks who talk about him as a teammate, and you hear people who talk about how inspirational he was, how he was kind of constantly trying to better himself, better those around him, challenge himself, challenge those around him, that he was the kind of teammate that wasn't afraid to push you, but wasn't afraid to ask you to push him too. And then you hear a lot of people talk about his son, and I think he may have actually had two children, but I know when he was at Indiana, his son, James the Fourth, had been born, and he wasn't shy about bringing him around the team. He wasn't shy about, you know, bringing him around his coaches. He constantly kind of talked about how he wanted to succeed in life for his son, and you know, whatever happened, and obviously there's still a lot of details we don't know. The coroner has to go through a lot of different procedures, and you know, there's ongoing investigations from various law enforcement agencies whether or not foul play is suspected. I don't think anybody knows at this point. You know, cause of death, again, these are all things that are going to be determined in the coming days and weeks, so it would be wrong to speculate too much. But I think it's fair to say it caught a lot of people on the blind side, and a lot of people hurting that he's gone.
And James Hardy's career was very stellar at Indiana University. Single season receptions record with 79, single season touchdown catches with 16. He was unstoppable that year. You named the team, and it didn't matter. He was catching scores. He was putting up big yards. He was absolutely fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I mean, he and I were technically, he's a year older than me, but technically he and I were in the same class because he redshirted in football anyway, his freshman season. So, I mean, he was a redshirt freshman year. I was a freshman, and I worked at the Indiana Daily Student. I was sports editor. I did all those kinds of things. I can remember sort of intensely following IU football from even then, sort of a professional perspective. And you're right. He set a lot of Indiana records. One of his former teammates told me he asked him in the summer, the spring before the bowl season in 2007, how many touchdowns do you think I need to make it to the NFL, you know, next year? Because obviously by this point he was in his fourth year of college. He was, you know, well-regarded, and everyone, I think, kind of looked at that season as a potential breakout season, not just for Hardy, but for Indiana, and obviously to win seven games and go to the bowl. And the teammate said, I think you need 12. And Hardy said, okay. And he got 16. So, you know, I think what struck me in talking to teammates is he always kind of seemed like an intense, quiet guy from the outside, but he was a guy that wasn't afraid to challenge teammates, but he also wasn't afraid to ask to be challenged, whether it was by his teammates, by his coaches, to get better, not just as a player, but as a person, as a father, whatever.
Another tragic chapter from that era, obviously with losing Coach Terry Heppner too early, and obviously losing James Hardy early as well.
They were very close, incredibly close.
And it's just an awful story, and one we have to cover because obviously that's how big of a personality and big of a player he was here. And a sad news on a Thursday afternoon. Hey, we appreciate your time. We know that you've got stuff to do. We love that you check in, and hopefully we don't have any other. We can get some other fun announcements out of the way. The other only announcement that people I want to pass on to, the Florida International game time for, I believe, the 16th is 3:30, whatever that weekend is, September 15th or 16th, whatever that Saturday is, 3:30 TV time for there. That was the other announcement yesterday. Thanks for being with us, my friend. Well, we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.